Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 461 for comics originally released on June 8th, 2016. Now, starting us off in DC is Flash Rebirth number 1. We talked at length last time about DC Universe Rebirth number 1. I really overall enjoyed it, had a few concerns here and there, had high hopes for this, because Flash was obviously a key part of that book. I don't know about you, but when I opened this, I was frankly a little confused. They open on a scene evocative of the Flash's mother's death, making me think, are we current day, are we not? Oh, next page, okay, got it, current day. Then they do some stuff fairly reminiscent of what happened in DC Universe Rebirth. But really, it wasn't until like about 10 pages in that it was clear that some of this was happening before DC Rebirth, then the events of DC Universe Rebirth happen, and you know, they'd made a big to-do in the solicit about don't read this until you've read DC Universe Rebirth number 1. No mention of that on the cover or the first couple of pages. So again, I started this a little confused before it's like, ah, this is where it ties in.
Yeah, and it was almost like they rehashed, if you didn't read DC Universe Rebirth, you got all the Flash pieces and some of the other stuff rehashed for you as well here. It really took the Rebirth label and to its limit. It just felt like it was spoon-feeding this character to you, the status quo, in little tiny bite-sized pieces, really, really breaking it down. I thought it was really overly simplistic and almost to an origin level, and it just seemed like, for someone who's never ever read a Flash comic before, here you go. And then we're going to give you everything you need to know. And I mean, on one hand, that's great. On the other hand, I just thought it was really, really dumbed down.
Well, and it was also a little confusing if they expected you to have read DC Universe Rebirth number 1 or not, because a lot of the highlights reel of what's relevant to the Flash is told here. And then we even get a little bit after that wasn't in there to kind of further, you know, what's going on here. And on the one hand, I appreciate that. But on the other hand,
but it was incremental.
It was incremental. And oh, by the way, it picks up in this other title. You know, you want to find out what happens to this guy, go read this other thing. So I had mixed feelings on that. There's one spot where we get a 2-page splash with the two Flashes.
Yeah, it's a great page.
Well, the background there. Mm-hmm. What is that in the background?
It kind of looks
like a cityscape from the top down.
Yeah, like they're running up a...
Are they running up the side of a building? Because the buildings next to them look to be as if we're looking at them from the street level.
Yeah, it does look like they've run... The cities are in the background, like they've run... They're above them, but they're also in them, so...
I guess it was trying to almost use the gutter of the 2-page spread as an inset panel.
Yeah.
Shown that they were going down the city a ways, but now we've zoomed into street level or something.
Yeah. You're seeing, I guess you're looking in print, I'm looking digitally. And if you look digitally, you can see the two speed arcs of them running. And it's running down in between the two cityscapes. And they're splitting there
I'm reading this in print, and I see the same thing, other than the fact the yellow streak down the center, the middle thing, is literally lost in the gutter here.
Yeah.
Because this isn't a center spread in the middle of the book. This is one where two different sheets of paper kind of coming together.
Gotcha.
It doesn't quite line up right.
Yeah. So it's basically, you're zoomed in on them shooting through the middle of that city.
Well, I'm just not seeing the part of their trail in the city is not clear, is what I'm saying.
Gotcha.
Okay, it's lost in the gutter and stuff. I guess the other thing you missed because you didn't get it in print is the same kind of 6 or 8 pages of ads in the middle of the story. That's really winning me over in terms of not liking it at all.
you're not a fan.
Oh, it's a page or two of ads. I don't mind. But when it's, wait a sec, flip, 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 flip. Oh, wait, the story's finally continuing again. It's like a 10-minute commercial break or something on TV. It's too long, too much at once. That's a mechanics of the print layout, not an aspect of the story per se, but it's certainly part of the package I got in print. I'll be honest, I was very pleasantly surprised by the cameo by Batman, and I think cameo is actually maybe a generous term, because it seems like we're very much at arm's length during this scene. We hear, you know, I guess one or two lines of dialogue from Batman, but the rest of it is just kind of implied that it happened and we're not totally privy to it.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because this wasn't something that was in DC Universe Rebirth. So it's an aspect of DC Universe Rebirth that was continuing, presumably will continue either maybe here or, I don't know, one of the Batman titles, or maybe Justice somewhere, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. It was nice to see it at least not completely ignored after the one shot. But again, tell me where to go to continue with that would be appreciated.
It's almost like you get the feeling that you'll get a little bit of it in the pages of these two books, but it's not going to move very quickly. It's going to be a crime that they're trying to solve, but not full time.
A slow moving plot in the pages of The Flash. That's ironic. You're probably right. I hope you're right, because the alternative is they just don't do anything with it.
Yeah.
And I'm not expecting them to solve this, you know, next week or something. I get that's not going to happen. But the fact that I don't even know where to follow it incrementally is a little frustrating.
I got a question, because, sure. I mean, is it okay that, you know, they made DC Universe Rebirth a month? You have to read this. And you have to read this because it lays the foundation. And then they waste, in my estimation, they waste a lot of real estate in Flash Rebirth by touching on a lot of the same things that were in the DC Universe Rebirth. And I don't know if I'm okay with that, because I invested my time and money in the other book because you told me to. And so now let's get on with it.
I think having spent about 10 pages prior to the events of DC Rebirth in this issue was a mistake. I mean, that comic had already happened for us.
Yeah.
You know, 2 weeks ago at this point.
Yeah.
So resetting the scene to prior to that, replaying that stuff, yeah, I think it was a mistake. You know, it was one comic. It was a $2.99 comic that was, what, 80 pages or 64 at least. It was packed. Yeah.
Yes.
So I don't think it's unreasonable, particularly given all the hype around it, to have expected people to have read that.
And for me as a reader, it was very successful.
It was a good issue.
I really enjoyed it. I was excited for all the new Rebirth titles, all the characters that I had given up on in the New 52, by and large. I was excited to try them out again. It had done its job. And then they laid these Rebirth issues at my feet, and some are really working better than others, and some are taking advantage of the goodwill that they've generated to get me here. And some, like, I don't think Flash Rebirth did that. It didn't grab me like it should have.
No, I think it got off to a rocky start for me, and I thought it was okay. But it was nowhere near as epic as the solicit made it out to be. The solicit made it sound like this was going to be a massive turning point, a core part of the meta arc for the DC universe, etc. And I felt, yeah, it was okay. You know, certainly was nowhere near as good as DC Universe Rebirth or one or two of the other things I read. It wasn't horrible. It was okay, but it wasn't a major moment in time of the DC universe. And maybe that they weren't setting out to be that, but it felt repetitive from DC Universe Rebirth number one. It didn't capture the spirit of fun, the energy, the excitement I had from that issue. It didn't follow it up here, which is exactly what I was afraid was going to happen. And part of why I was a little, you know, yeah, it's a good issue, but when we reviewed that.
Yeah, yeah.
To me, this was almost a guaranteed sort of a thing to happen. Just because it's I don't want to say it's really easy to put together a really great issue. It's not. But it's easy to do it for one versus a whole line of them. And I think that's one of the major things DC is struggling with. I, again, thought this was okay. I just had mixed feelings. Again, everything from like the Batman cameo where it's like, hey, that's cool, but we're really, you know, at arm's length there. And that really was a little off-putting to me. So even when they were doing things I was liking, they weren't doing it in a way I was liking. So for me, I'm going to go with a B minus on this. I think there's a lot of potential with the character. I think they could definitely recover from this, but it was not the strong retooling, relaunch, new direction, whatever you want to call it, that I think it could have been, and I was hoping it would have been.
Yeah, I'm at a C plus. I was, yeah, just a little disappointed at the way it was constructed and kind of the rehashing of the material. And I just feel like they had me hook, line, and sinker with their DC Universe Rebirth issue, ready to go on this, and it wasn't great. Of course, I'll read the first issue of Flash as well to give it another chance, but I'm a little disappointed.
Yeah, I can understand that. I wonder how much of this is going to be kind of like what happened with the New 52 1 year later and a couple other points at DC's time, where they had a really good sales pitch initially with something like, in this case, DC Universe Rebirth, but the stuff that followed just failed to kind of close the deal long term. We'll see.
Yeah.
There's obviously plenty more titles coming out, so we'll have plenty more to discuss as things go forward. Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah.
This, you sound so excited. this is New Avengers.
I'm just 12. Bummed about Flash.
I can understand that. This is a Civil War II tie-in. This is by Al Ewing. Gerardo Sandoval is the artist. No, Paco Medina is the artist. Apparently, Sandoval was supposed to be, but don't know what happened. Plans change. That happens. This was one where we were just talking about the repetitiveness in Flash Rebirth with the DC Universe Rebirth number one. This felt, and is kind of in keeping with the whole Civil War thing, very repetitive with the Civil War number one that I had also read this week, because we get the whole bit with the Celestial Destructor and stuff coming into, I guess, New York City, and, you know, the sorcerers, you know, doing their thing, and that was pretty impressive, just like it was in Civil War number one when I read that. Actually, it's even more impressive when you realize magic is dead over in Doctor Strange, Scarlet Witch, heck, even Deadpool, I believe. So the fact they can do all this hocus-pocus stuff with magic dead, and I want to clarify, when I say magic is dead, I mean the mystical power stuff, not magic the X-Men or X-Woman or, you know, the younger sister of Colossus. It's also confusing, because she's standing right here. She seems fine. Of course, so does the mystical, magical mumbo-jumbo stuff, even though that's clearly not fine in other books. That's what I love about a shared universe and continuity, is it's so clear. But so much of this was flushing out kind of that scene in that aspect of the Civil War number one, that it felt like, you know, they didn't really value the page space they've got here and how precious it is, because they've only got, 20 pages here.
Yeah. Are we spoiling this when we talk about it?
Yeah, maybe. Sorry.
Okay.
I wasn't intending to, but you're right, I did.
Well, no, you haven't really. But I was thinking the John Garrett character and what he does at the end. I mean, that's a surprise.
Well, it's a surprise, but what got me was the final two scenes of this seem to be setting up two different threats for the team. The first seemed to be setting up an eventual fight scene between the new Avengers and the new Revengers. It's like, okay, like that wasn't going to happen the minute they were introduced, but fine, it was very clearly setting that up. But then there's that other scene at the end there that's setting up yet another direction, another kind of threat for the team. And I didn't particularly like the direction it went, but it's like, we'll see how it plays out. The thing for me, though, was those two endings setting all of that up, and a little at the beginning was kind of tying into the John Garrett stuff there. It made the issue feel a little unfocused, because I couldn't tell if they were setting up the new Revengers storyline, this other storyline with Garrett, if they were really trying to focus on tying in with Civil War II, if they were trying to reunite the new Avengers after they'd split recently. It was unfocused, and there were some aspects of the scenes other than what was recapping of Civil War II number one. I hate it when they put numbers in titles. But there were aspects of those other scenes that felt just a little decompressed. They could have tightened some stuff up. They could have put some more meat into this issue.
Yeah, I mean, because the Roberto da Costa storyline and him, what he's doing, that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But then the John Garrett thing and his turning was also interesting. But yeah, you're right. It's a little unfocused because which one's the most important storyline that we need to be focused on the most? Because they're both kind of seemed important.
And again, the whole new Revengers stuff, too. That seems like it's a big deal. I don't know. I assume the John Garrett stuff, because they actually play up that at the beginning as well at the end.
And so there's like, is there like an army of Dum Dum Dugan life model decoys?
This gets a little spoilerish, but it's already been revealed in some other comics. So, yes, there are. My understanding was there was a finite number. This goes back to the Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D. Series that he was part of. And comes out of whatever was the last event over at Marvel that had, like, maybe it was a all new, all different Marvel Point One or something like that.
Yeah, I remember them alluding to that before. I didn't remember there being 50 of them.
I believe there is only 50, and I thought he'd actually gone through at least one or two of them in Howling Commandos, but I could be mistaken on that.
Oh.
I don't know where they're going with some of this. I thought it was cool they were at least trying to pull Dum Dum Dugan out of a dead title into this. Of course, there's, you know, like two or three other S.H.I.E.L.D. titles they could pull him into also.
But the thing is, there's a Dum Dum Dugan with John Garrett that gets turned, or hacked, or whatever. And then when you flash to the group of them, they're all saying, let's go. The first one has an 01 on his chest. Like, he's the first life model decoy. So it's like they just randomly pulled one out for the one that's actually being used now? They don't go in order?
That's an excellent question. This also doesn't look anything like the facility that we'd seen them in before. The main distinguishing feature of that other facility was a huge stack of bowler hats. He would come out, don the hat, and get going.
Yeah. Okay, that's right.
I hadn't even noticed that, but you're right. That is... It's interesting. Again, I don't know where they're going here, but... They seem to be trying to play this title as part of the Marvel meta arc. They mention the Alpha Flight Station in Captain Marvel. They mention Wakandia. They have a lot of things trying to make this seem like a really pivotal title in the Marvel universe. And I'm not saying it's not a pivotal title. I'm just not necessarily saying it is either.
Is this the main Avengers book now? Or is it still all new, all different, do you think?
I say it's all new, all different, but I think it's up for debate. There are a couple of reasons I would go with all new, all different Avengers as the main title. One, it's got a Captain America, a Thor, and an Iron Man. Now, whether you consider them to be the real and legit, the main ones, I'm not going to argue that either way. But having those three characters in one team in one book certainly gives it a leg up. Those are at least the names of a core legacy, you know, archetype Avengers.
That makes sense.
It also has Jarvis. So, you know, hey, that gives it a leg up right there, too.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I think if push came to shove and I felt the need to say this was the core Avenger book, I'd have to do some thinking. Might even have to do some time on Wikipedia, Comic Book DB, and do a little research to put a cogent argument together. But I think I could fabricate one that almost sounded plausible. Don't know that I'd say it's believable. To me, this is, I mean, they've got so many Avenger books out there. And this wasn't bad, but it was unfocused. It was unclear what it was setting up. It's not something that I felt if you came in for the crossover, you would just come out of it saying, wow, this is amazing. You'd be saying, wow, there's a lot going on. What the heck should I be understanding and following?
Yeah. I mean, I liked it, but I did get the sense that there was an awful lot of stuff happening, and the issue probably could have been a little better had they kind of focused in a little bit. All in all, though, I thought it was a pretty good read, so I gave it a B-. I'm not sure if it's good enough for me to say this needs to go on my pull list, but I'm not sorry I read it, and it had some fun stuff in there.
I would agree with that. I'm not sorry I read it. It's certainly not at risk of getting tossed off my pull list for me, but I have low standards there, apparently. It had some good stuff here and there. It's just not something where I felt it really knocked it out of the park. The unfocused thing kind of bothered me a little. I'm going to go with a B- here. Had I been in a more charitable mood, it could have easily gotten to a B for me. It's not bad, but to me, the two things that prevent me from saying, ooh, somebody's got to read this issue, unfocused, redundant with Civil War 2, number one. You know, it's they could have and should have done better on this, but they didn't do a bad job. I just, again, higher expectations, I guess. Shall we move on to our other book?
Yes.
This is Lumberjanes Gotham Academy, number 1 of 6. This is by Boombox and DC. Actually, I think it's, Boom that's the actual publisher of this. Obviously, kind of co-publishing and whatnot with DC. I've never read Lumberjanes. I'll be honest and say that generally Gotham Academy doesn't totally work great for me. It's okay. It's had its moments. Don't regret reading it, but if it was if I needed to cut back, it would be an easy title to cut. I also think it's safe to say I am probably not part of the intended audience for either Gotham Academy, Lumberjanes, or this crossover, but I was curious. I figured, okay, let's check this out.
Ditto.
kind of figured you'd be in the same boat there.
Yeah, yep.
I'm pretty sure I've mentioned in the past, starting off with kind of like a teaser scene and then cut to several hours earlier. Not a story technique I'm particularly fond of.
No, it's a crutch.
It's also exactly what they did here.
Yes.
And I think needlessly, because I think they could have started, and I get why they didn't. It's a Boom book, so start with the Lumberjanes. But they could have started with Gotham Academy and then cut to, you could basically move pages 1 and 2 about, I don't know, 6 or 8 pages later, and it'd have worked fine.
It's safe to say that I think a lot of folks checking this out are coming to this from the other title and probably not reading both. I would say there's probably not a lot of folks that are reading both these titles. They're either reading one or the other, or this, the fact that they're bringing these together has put it on the radar for folks. And so, therefore, I would think there's a large proportion of new readers to one or the other property or both. Mm. And I think they've have a really missed opportunity here to give us the Avengers page at the beginning with the cast of characters, you know, just
kind of the roll call or whatever.
The roll call of who the Lumberjanes are that are going to be in this story, who the Gotham Academy kids are, and a little, just a little line or two about each one of them. Bring us up all up to speed so that when we interact with them, we know who they are. Because you're asking an awful lot in 30 pages for you to show and don't tell us all that we need to know about this huge cast.
But I think we learned some very valuable things about this shared universe here.
Yeah, yeah.
First thing I learned is, like many fictional buildings, the air ducts at Gotham Academy are huge.
Giant, giant.
You know, 5 feet by 10 feet or something, maybe not quite that big, but at least 2 by 3. It was insane. I agree with you, though, that they should have started out with that kind of a roll call, that kind of an introduction. Assume that at best you're familiar with one of the two halves of the crossover, but not necessarily both. Although I think there are going to be some that are, some readers. But there were a couple of things in here that, not knowing the Lumberjanes, and not considering myself an expert even on the Gotham Academy kids, that kind of confused me. I felt like I got a decent introduction, kind of, sort of, to the Lumberjanes as a group, but not as individuals. And when we get to a couple of pages near, I think we're near the end. Yeah, about third page from the end, maybe. They've got this ravine, and one of the characters, I think it's April, but I'm not entirely positive, one of the Lumberjanes, kicks a tree. Wham, it goes down. I'm like, whoa, whoa. Single kick, knocks down a tree. A kid. Do these Lumberjanes have, like, superpowers or something? What's going on? I have no idea. I don't think so, but it looked like a live, healthy tree, so you can't say, oh, well, it was old, decrepit, and had been struck by lightning or something. It goes to your point of a missed opportunity to introduce me to these characters a little bit better individually on both sides, get the lay of the land, and explain to me, I don't know, maybe what the heck a Lumberjane is. Are they like Boy Scout, Girl Scouts of some sort, maybe? I don't know.
That's the sense I got, yes.
That was the sense I got, but there was very little in the book to actually say things to that effect.
I think there was like one line in there, maybe, that said something about Lumberjanes, scouts or something like
Uphold the Scout Pledge or something like that.
Yeah,
there was that. It was just a little vague and...
Mm-hmm.
it was enough for me to understand what was going on, but not enough for me to totally connect with these characters and say, wow, I should be reading the other property.
The thing I thought that worked really well here, once they got together and they met, and I thought that worked pretty organically, them meeting and getting along, and they were both pretty enthusiastic group of kids and adventurous. And once they started going after the, you're getting away from the bad guys, you know, you kind of got a, like a Scooby-Doo cartoon feel to it. And, you know, and there was some fun things happening, and, there were way too many cast members for me to keep straight. I don't know their names. And sometimes I couldn't tell if this was a Lumberjane or a Gotham Academy. I guess they kind of all dress the same at Gotham Academy, so that helps. But yeah, it had that fun, but I'm not really invested enough to know who's who and who my favorite character might be. But there was some fun stuff here, and it was enjoyable to read.
I think what worked well is the two properties are fairly compatible, and you're right, the story mechanics for how they meet and all of that stuff, that worked well. It didn't take much kind of bizarre story gyrations to get the characters into the same vicinity. And once they did that, and I do think getting the Gotham students into this place where the Lumberjanes were, there was an aspect of that that was a little, really, that's kind of far-fetched. But if you take that aside, once they meet, everything felt organic, it felt compatible, it felt like these were properties that could and should cross over. And you're right, there is a Scooby Gang aspect to kind of both groups that kind of works, and it's got a classic team-up feel to it of sorts. And my basic takeaway for this is it's not a bad story, but I'm really not part of the target audience, I think. So I don't expect this to really knock my socks off or say, wow, this is amazing. You know, it was a decent read, but it was one that I could just as easily leave as continue with.
Yeah. It's 6-issue miniseries. I don't know if there's enough here for me to invest for those other 5. I'm glad I sampled it, though, to kind of see what the Lumberjanes are all about. I had already read some Gotham Academy. And although I'll probably not be continuing, I thought this was pretty good. So I gave it a B-.
Interesting. I went with a C+ because, I mean, I don't disagree that it's pretty good. I didn't connect with it. I came out of it still not knowing who all the characters were, really what a Lumberjane is. I felt like I got the start of a good introduction to the Lumberjanes, but not something that would really sell me on, ooh, I should be reading that book, or even really what the concept of that book would be.
Yeah, you're not going to go and get the first Lumberjanes trade because of your interactions with them in this book here.
No.
Sadly.
But to me, that would have put this book at an A, A+, A-, somewhere in that range.
Mm-hmm.
But even failed to get into that B where I felt like I had at least enough knowledge about the other property of Lumberjanes, because again, I've read Gotham Academy, to suss out if it's right for me or not, other than just, well, it's compatible with this, so maybe it's not. So I felt there was more, there was a missed opportunity to this book that I felt was a bit of a shame. Again, not bad, but certainly not something I would go out and say, ooh, you gotta go read this or check it out. It's eh. If you're a big fan of both, it's worth you. Well, if you're a big fan of both, you've already read this.
Yeah.
If you're a big fan of one and curious about the other, you've probably already read this. Other than that, I certainly don't feel personally the need to go recommend it to somebody.
What I will say, I do applaud DC doing this because they're the bigger fish. So they have more to lose by lending their characters to other smaller publishers. And I like the fact that now they've done this with IDW and they're doing this with Boom. And I think that's cool. And I think that, with the TMNT Batman thing, that was a real hit for you. You really liked that.
Yeah.
So sometimes it really, they put two together and it really works and clicks. And then sometimes it's just okay. But I applaud them for trying and for allowing these things to happen because I think they're fun.
Absolutely. I really think at this point DC doesn't have much to lose with doing it, and as long as they continue to pick good matchups, and I think Batman, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that was a good matchup. I think this is a great matchup, even though it didn't necessarily work for me. I would like to see DC continue to have a little bit of this open door policy and have some of their characters cross over with stuff from some of the other publishers. I think it benefits both the other publishers, and I really think right now it benefits DC quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, it helps. I'm sure it helps bring new readers in for both sides.
Yeah. So all of that having been said, I am current on my reading.
Nice.
I have caught up on everything. Matter of fact, a couple of things I had gotten at, I think it was C2E2 from Aftershock. I've even read those things, Replica and Super Zero. Although I think I'm an issue behind on Super Zero. I haven't got number 5 yet, but I ordered that late from DCBS, so that's on me. As far as Rebirth goes, because we talked about talking about that, that I've read the stuff.
Yeah.
Green Arrow Rebirth, I liked it, but it was a bit of a departure from kind of what had gone before in terms of tone and style. It's in continuity with it, and they reference, you know, his sister and some things like that. So it's not like it's a total, you know, departure, but it feels different. And there's something about seeing Green Arrow and Black Canary meet again for the first time for the who knows how manyth time. It was cool, but a little bit odd. And also a little...
I really liked it. I thought it was pretty good. But I don't... Yeah, I guess I don't have that the history with the characters that you do either. So you've probably been there and done that a few more times than I have. And that might change it as well. But I thought it was a much... more enjoyable read than some of the other Green Arrow runs that I've read recently.
I think that's fair to say, but I also don't think Green Arrow's had a good go for the last couple during the New 52, by and large.
Yeah, they've tried.
They've tried a lot of things.
They've thrown some different creators. They've done some kind of reboots in the middle of the run, and it just has not really captured my imagination. So I thought this was pretty solid and one that I'm really excited to read the first issue.
I'm curious where they go with this. I just think it's a little ironic that one of the main aspects of this is kind of getting Green Arrow and Black Canary back together, because that feels a little kind of out of step with what's going on with Arrow, where they seem to be taking that character into a more solo direction potentially next season. But you know, hey, they're doing their own thing here, as they should. And it shows promise. It's just, again, I've done an episode on the wedding of Green Arrow and Black Canary. I've read them as far back as the Satellite era and beyond for DC. I've got a long tenure with these characters. This is good, but it feels a little retreading. And if this arc is going to be, or the game plan here is the formation of their relationship, it's like I've been down that path. But if they do it well, I'm good with that. Green Lantern's Rebirth. I'll be honest, I was a little surprised to see Hal make a cameo in that issue. Felt honestly like he was a little bit of a jerk to Simon and Jennifer with what he did there. But, you know, hey, that's setting up the premise for this series. Fine, go with it. It felt like a Rebirth, since we really haven't seen much of Simon Baz or Jennifer. They're new Green Lanterns. They've never met before. There was an aspect of beginning of story to this that I liked.
You're right.
It seems to take place after this week's Green Lantern Corps Edge of Oblivion number 6, because Simon Baz was in that, and Simon Baz is in Green Lantern Rebirth. But all I can say about the end of Edge of Oblivion is it was a really unsatisfying end to that volume, and again, presumably takes place before this. Aquaman Rebirth...
Well, before we move on, I think Green Lanterns was really a kind of a reimagining, I thought, of what the title was going to be. It wasn't really what I was expecting. And it kind of breaks the Rebirth titles for me in the two camps. There seems to be the Rebirth titles that take the character that you know and, you know, freshens them up to a maybe a fan friendlier version of that character.
Okay.
And then we have something like this Green Lanterns, where it's, well, let's tell some different stories, different lanterns that maybe you don't know that well, and that's the way we're going to go. And like Superman is it like maybe a different Superman than you know. So there's really no consistency in the Rebirth issues. They kind of take their mission differently, it seems like.
I would agree with that. I think there's a couple like Wonder Woman where there's an aspect of kind of the traditional everything you know is wrong, kind of let's uncover the new truth sort of aspect. That's not literally what they did there, but it was evocative of that.
Yeah, that title is really annoying me, because they're going to go twice a month, but one title is going to be telling one story, and the other issue will be telling another story, and it's almost really like they're not playing fair in my mind. It's like you have Spider-Man and Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, under the same heading, and you're just telling having two different things going on.
Amazing Spider-Man and Untold Tales of Spider-Man, because half the Wonder Woman stuff's set in the past.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost any other writer than Greg Rucka, I would probably be right there with you, and I've got major concerns about what you're talking about, of it essentially being two separate titles alternating under the cover, under a single cover.
Yeah.
But he's a really talented writer, and I'm willing to give him a bit of a benefit of the doubt, but I'm also not going to be surprised if in a couple of weeks we're here saying, that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, and I think what we're going to be saying in a month or so is, boy, these will probably read much better in trade, because they're two different stories. You're bouncing back and forth, and you're basically reading two Wonder Woman books.
But they're at least monthly, so it's no worse than we would have been before if they'd been two separate titles.
Right.
So I don't see it as a huge deal if they were doing this and it was a monthly book and essentially turning each story into a bi-monthly, get an arc a year. It's like, well,
that would be tough.
That would suck.
Well, I'm kind of curious as to if this happens in some of the other books as well, mm-hmm. or we're going to go to the creator change model where there's an artist for an arc, another artist for an arc, and they flip flop that way.
I'm expecting that to happen.
I would think that would be predominantly what they do.
I think that's probably the best model. If you can get a writer who can keep the stories coming out fast enough, mm-hmm. and can work enough ahead that the art teams have time.
Yeah.
That just seems like a smooth route to go. We've seen it work on Amazing Spider-Man and some other titles. So I'm curious how things play out. Aquaman Rebirth I thought was good, but not one where it's like, oh, wow, it's amazing. It reminded me of the early issues of the New 52 Aquaman series in a good way.
Yeah, I thought this was a good issue as well, and something that got me excited for a character that I had never really connected to that well either. And mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty cool, some of the things that they addressed in this issue and touched on that I felt was really strong.
Detective Comics, I felt, was a reading of the roster, if you will.
Yeah.
I think they've got some interesting ideas. I'm curious how well it plays out. There have been some comments on the forum about, is this really the right character to have pulled for that series or whatever, that I kind of agree with, and some that maybe I don't necessarily agree with, but it's got some promise. It's one that I think we should check on in a couple of issues. And then the other one out of the whole Rebirth stuff that I haven't touched
Action.
On. Action Comics.
And boy, did it earned its name, didn't it? It was nonstop action.
It was head and shoulders above the others for me. I thought it was really solid. I thought it was really good. Had some interesting stuff. There was something about the story, the art, the energy of the book. That's what I'm looking for, that I'm not getting in some of these others. The others are okay. But this, to me, felt like the truest successor in terms of tone, style, energy, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
To DC Universe Rebirth.
And the best part about this issue is you find out how Superman shaves. And
You didn't know?
I did not know that. I did not know that little tidbit. I had always wondered how on earth would he find kryptonite blades or something. And that was very cool.
You see, when I was growing up, Superboy was still being published. And it was actually around a little before the time it flipped to Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes and then Legion of Superheroes.
Okay.
And Superboy was in, high school. And this was an era where they would deal with, how can he use his heat vision through his glasses without melting them? How can this work? And kind of the pseudoscience thing.
Fun.
So that and some of the other Superman titles of the time had already covered this is how he shaves and a few things like that. Things that are nice little tidbits to toss in. Don't dwell on them. It's just a panel and move on. You know, and again, that was one of the things that I felt was evocative of storytelling of years gone past, that worked for me in a good way here. So I'm most excited about the Superman Action Comics stuff out of what I've read so far. The other thing, though, man, this week there were a couple of comics that were, you know, again, we talked Green Lantern Corps, Edge of Oblivion, but Red Hood Arsenal also ended its volume. Black Canary ended its volume. Those all were very, very unsatisfying. Just kind of, we're out of time. I guess we're done.
Exactly. Mike Myers gives it to me a little bit because I claim some of these don't matter anymore. And he is firmly in the other camp that all comics matter and all comics are important. But you knew with the when Rebirth happened and they were removing all these creators around, that the short end of the stick was going to go to these titles that were losing their creators.
They had to be lame duck titles. And that doesn't mean they couldn't have really planted the ending and said, wow, this was, maybe it was cut short, but it was a good ending. They had the opportunity, maybe.
Right. Yeah. They can all be A-plus comics, but I had a feeling a lot of these existing lame duck titles were not going to be that great.
I don't think it was as bad as when Flashpoint was announced and had the feeling that the DC universe was potentially going to get rebooted like it did. Yeah. At least something was going to happen, but everything leading up to it almost immediately became a lame duck title.
Because of the delays, don't we have a 51 and a 52 of Justice League coming still?
I think so, but I'll be honest, I'm a little unclear because I've gotten some cancellation notices on like Justice League of America and a few other things here and there.
Okay.
But yeah, we still have a few other things lingering.
So some of them might just be canceling the back ends.
Or they might not. I don't know. They may just be running slow. I think that's the case on a few books. Because of the fact that Rebirth titles are going to be coming out for the next few months, I think a few other titles are going to continue for a little bit. Don't know that for certain, but that's kind of what I suspect.
Yeah, it'll be kind of cool to get out of the New 52 completely into Rebirth and get into a rhythm and see what we've got.
I guess I don't see it as that much of a delineation. It's not that solid of a line. It's not that clear of a split to me. It's another block on the same road, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Maybe I don't read the solicits well enough and because I have no idea. I have no idea what the lineup's going to look like in 3 months. I don't know how many Vertigo titles are going to be left. I have no idea how many actual $2.99 titles are going to be there. How many All-Star Batman at $4.99 are going to, you know, things like that are going to be around. I have no clue what the total numbers are going to be.
Understanding, because I haven't really looked that far down the line either. My understanding, though, is $4.99 books like the All-Star Batman are few and far between. That may be the only one. It may not. But most of the books are going to be at $2.99 because I think they realize that, particularly going twice monthly, they need to keep the price down. And also that they're not at a creative high at the moment. So competing on price is a smart move for them, giving that many fewer barriers to entry. Now, the other thing going on with DC, not to focus just on them, but since we're talking about them, there's that whole Hanna-Barbera thing. Did you read Wacky Raceland number one this week?
It's on my stack, but I'm not in a hurry.
Man, I was really curious what you were gonna have to say on that. We may talk about that next week if we remember. We may not. It depends. What else came out that was interesting this week? A couple of more Civil War II, The Amazing Spider-Man, Gods of War. Gods of War essentially seems to have taken the Hercules spot. I'm not sure if that title is ended or continuing or what's going on there, but it felt very much like a Hercules issue, and not in a bad way. I enjoy the Hercules book.
A book that took me till this week to finish was Deadpool 13 because it was a crossover in one that had four issues, two Deadpool, a Daredevil, and Power Man Iron Fist issue all crammed into one comic. And it was a full crossover in one. And it wasn't bad. It was long.
It was long, but what I appreciate is it was, I think, a $9.99 book.
Yeah.
Four issues for that. That's a good deal. And getting it all in one sitting, I like that too. And it was done by the various creative teams as if it was issue like 7.1 of Daredevil or, you know, whatever the numbers would have been. I thought that was a fun read. I enjoyed it. But yeah, it was not a short read either.
Now, how are you? Are you liking Civil War 2 so far?
It's okay. Civil War 2, I guess, was number one this week or last week? I'm blurring.
I think it was last week.
You're right.
I think it was last week, yeah.
It did a better job setting up the basic crux of what's going on. I think that Tony Stark's attitude in this seems a little odd given where he was at in the original Civil War. There are aspects that are very evocative of it in terms of a philosophical divide and the heroes, all this kind of stuff. So far, it's all right. I'm finding it kind of sort of interesting, but not as... I guess to me, it's very easy to say which side I would have gone on. Whereas they could have possibly picked a philosophical debate where it's, oh, both sides have merit. Of course, the original time, too, it was easy to pick a side there. Of course, anytime you've got a philosophical conundrum and you've got Tony Stark on one side and Steve Rogers on the other, at least at that point, Steve Rogers, it's no-brainer. You go with Cap.
Yeah.
Then you find out what the issue is and judge for yourself. But, I mean, usually it's safe to go with Cap. This time, he's not really weighed in as much. It's Captain Marvel taking the lead on the other side. I'm curious where it goes, how it plays out. So far, I'm enjoying what I'm reading, but I don't think it's the be-all, end-all, amazing Marvel event that it's a sequel to.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to not reading it anymore. I don't think I need to finish it. I doubt it's going to have the payoff because most Marvel events don't. So I don't know. I might read one more, but it's so far it's pretty unimpressive.
I guess I don't need more events. I just need really good books. And one of the things that's been kind of rolling through my head last week or two, a lot of this around the whole rebirth thing, is what is a good comic? What is not? What am I looking for in these books? You know, can I get to where I can articulate that and really say what it is about, you know, DC Universe Rebirth or an Action Comics that I'm really liking, whereas there's some other books that are fine, but they're not really exciting me. And trying to zero in on that's something I'm mulling about and having a little bit of a hard time with, to be honest.
Right.
You know, I want a good story. I want characters that are developed have some depth to it. I want them to spend enough time in the story that they're not just racing through it, but also that they're not just moving at a snail's pace. I want things that matter, but I don't want it to be a roller coaster ride like I feel like I'm hanging on for dear life to keep up with the story. You know, and maybe I'm just a really fickle reader, but I don't think so. I fear that the big two in many respects have kind of lost their way, and more so at DC than Marvel. Marvel's, I think, doing a lot more better books, but I think DC is doing some really good books too and has been for some years. Big event, crossover, let's do this big banner of you know, be it Rebirth or All New, All Different or whatever. It's like just it's so easy to say, just tell good stories. But to me, I'm trying to piece together how I define that.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Vision at Marvel. The eighth issue came out. I don't know if you've been enjoying it as much as I have, but I've really liked it a lot. And this issue marked they released the name of the dog, and they had a name the dog contest. I don't know if you sent a name in on that or not.
I did not send a name in. I thought it was a good name for the dog. I thought it was a good issue. I thought the other character they pulled in for this issue, it's like, wow, that's a really good choice. I hadn't seen that coming, but I also stopped to think about it. It was such an obvious one once I saw it. It's like, yep, that was the right thing and good way to use the character. I mean, they're doing some good stuff there. That's one where, because of the somewhat deadpan android aspect of most of the characters and the almost muted tones, it's not a book where the art pops off the page.
Yeah.
But it's a good book.
Yeah, and you know, if Marvel was smart, they would greenlight this beyond 12 issues, because once this goes away, Tom King goes completely exclusive to DC, and I hope he can have as much freedom to do things at DC as he has at some of the other books.
He could always do a Red Tornado series there.
There you go. Let's do that, because I hope so. I hope so, because his stuff has been really, his Vertigo stuff has been fantastic, and this has been fantastic. I liked Grayson Run. Mm-hmm. Didn't love it, but I liked it. So I hope that he is used properly.
I hope so. I like it when creators find or get put on the property that really clicks with them in the audience. Again, Grayson really worked well for me. The stuff he's doing on Vision, I think, is terrific. So if finding those kinds of pairings is difficult and challenging, keeping him on there is not easy either. But I hope that he's put on the right kinds of books over at DC.
There's some good stuff coming out this week as well. We've got a thread on the forum where we're kind of comparing pull lists and what we're excited about, and seeing what other people are reading and getting jazzed for. It's kind of cool to see what you might not have been on your radar. And there's some good conversations happening on the forum. I encourage folks to check that out.
Yeah, I've been kind of lurking. I haven't really had time to kind of really dive in and post lately, just catching up on my reading, having some other stuff going on. But yeah, there's definitely some good discussions going on. I appreciate that. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next time as we discuss Batman number 1 from DC, Star Wars Han Solo number 1 from Marvel, and Jughead number 7 from Archie Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.